Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so page 42, number 45. Remembering the deity, right? So then one should always be trying to, you know, remember and think of the deity, do things in connection with the deity. Like that, because that's the idea, is the Lord is there, and that is how we can be involved in His service. Right? Because otherwise, then, you know, the opportunity is less. So meditating upon the deity. So you're remembering, so you're thinking, you're involved in some way or another. And then meditating upon, so then thinking of the deity there. So remembering here means that, like, as the person. And what you can do, meditating about, thinking about, is, you know, name, form, qualities, pastimes, that kind of aspect. Adopting a mood of servitorship towards the Lord. Right. So how to think that I'm serving the Lord, how I can do things for the Lord. Because otherwise then we might be absorbed in, you know, doing whatever we're doing. And then, you know, we have some sadhana. And we do that as a process that will be elevated. But you're trying to develop the aspect of actual rendering service, right? Thinking of the Lord as one's friend, because the point is that his relationship is such that he is friendly towards a devotee. He has that mood towards a devotee. It's just a matter of whether the devotee sees like that. I mean, it's this idea that the Lord is very strong or gets upset very easy, and that's what we think he's going to be like, right? Mm-hmm. Means if you like him to be like that, then he can respond like that. That's not a problem. But the point is he's like a friend. I mean, because he's sitting in the heart, so he's going everywhere with you. So he knows more about you than even your mommy knows, right? You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, like that. Surrendering oneself to the Lord. So, trying to, that, in all this, is trying to make it favorable that you are doing things for Him. That you are surrendering to Him, you are trying to see yourself in relationship to Him. So you see all these different things, it's all about the deity, how to do some nice service for the deity. You know, remember thinking about the attitude, all these things. So it's all centered around the deity. That's the whole point of Pancharatra, is how to make your life center around the Lord. Right? Offering as gifts to the deity items that are dear to oneself. So what you think is good, that's what you offer to the deity, right? Rather than something else like that. Because otherwise, you know, to a friend, you offer what you think is nice like that. Performing all endeavors for Krishna's pleasure. You know, not that you have all kinds of nice stuff for yourself and not for the deities. It's what you think is good, that's what you get for the deities. Performing all endeavors for Krishna's pleasure. So whatever you're doing during the day, you try to see that it's connected to Krishna for His pleasure. So that means automatically it improves the quality or the standard of it. Right? In every condition, taking complete shelter in Krishna. Because otherwise then we'll take shelter of our own plan. Right? Means we have a plan, but the point is this: by Krishna's grace, this plan will work. That's how it functions, right? Because that's the thing. The demons, they have plans, and they think it's because I have a plan, that's why it's going to work. You know, it's my plan, that's why it's going to work. But it's actually, we have a plan to serve Krishna, and then it's up to Krishna how it works out. We make the endeavor, but the results are up to him. Serving Tulsi Devi, as she's very close to Krishna, and so therefore, by her grace, by Tulsi, Govardhan, the dust of Vrindavan, Jamuna Devi, these you can get love of God. So one wants to do nicely. Respecting Srimad Bhagavatam and similar literature, right? So one should be, you know, have proper attitude towards the books, how you deal with the books, how they're kept, the books, you know, that when they're being discussed, that one has that respect.
No, it's just about Tulsi, you know, the morning, and like the spoons that they give are quite big, so your three drops, they're in like one spoon.
Mm.
Not that you gotta put three in a...
No, yeah, generally.
She like gets kind of drowned, you know, when the...
She's tolerant.
Like a tree.
Yeah.
Well, like a tree.
Yeah. But it's just yourself, then you just take one spoon and just like that. You just have the bigger, you know, I said. No, I'm saying just a bigger, big, huge pot.
So we can have it in the new temple.
Yeah, yeah. Come up through the floor.
Smoke it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm somewhere talking about coming down.
Maharaj, the respecting Srimad Bhagavatam, other literatures, most of the smartas, they respect so much, they don't even read. It's only on the...
Yeah, I mean, that's like true, absolute. You won't even touch it. Like, it's so much respect. Yeah, no, it should be... respect means you're still interactive. Yeah. If you're not interactive, then the respect is not... yeah. The personal aspect is kind of missing. Yeah, or, but I mean, they probably read it when they were 12, right? You know, so serving places like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka, and so then doing Dham Seva, service to the Dham. So that's important, because anything connected with the Lord, right? So the devotees, Tulsi, the Dham, his paraphernalia, everything. That's all part of Seva. Yes.
What's an example of service to the Dham?
I think it means cleaning, decorating. Remembering,
stewarding books,
creating facilities for pilgrims.
Yeah, for others to come and do the same. Mm-hmm. But I mean, then you'd want to see is that facilities means facilities to do service,
right?
Right, it means, you know, place to stay, proper thing, food, and that. But then there's opportunities for service. Mm-hmm. You know,
okay.
Serving the Vaishnavas. Like that. So then by serving the devotees, the Lord is pleased. Holding feasts in the company of devotees according to one's means. Right? So then you're making nice prasad and then distributing to the devotees, right? You know, according to your means. Don't go beyond your means. Right? But don't go less than your means either. Right? Like that. Observing vows like the Kartik Vrata and other devotional vows. Right? So then these, it means ways in which you at occasions, you know, the naimittic, according to how to increase one's devotion, how to increase the endeavor, because otherwise we just do our regular, so there should be some times where we try to do a little bit beyond that, then our regular becomes easier, right? And then doing something more then is also more accessible, so it just gradually increases like that. Celebrate joyfully the Lord's appearance day and other festivals. You know, so be absorbed, be involved, right? You know, if you have some problems, worry about those the day before or the day after. Ranjan Mastami, be involved, you know, because otherwise then it's not about Krishna, it's about yourself, you know, like that. 60. Serving and worshipping the deity with faith. Right, these are the last five. These are your main ones by which all the other ones expand, actually. Serving, worshiping the deity with faith, right? So this is the aspects of faith. Then after that, then you could be doing personal service, doing nice things, offering artiks, you know, celebrating. But the point is, if there's not the faith, what's the meaning of that? Because otherwise, in India, everybody celebrates Janmashtami and other festivals, but whether they have that faith, that's another element, right? relishing discourses on Srimad Bhagavatam amongst devotees, right? So it's not just respecting the Bhagavatam, but actually appreciating that time, that interaction with the devotees. Associating with devotees who are of the same mood and are more advanced, right? So that's what you're trying to get, is that we want to advance, but we advance by being inspired by others, their advancement, their mood. So, but at the same time, is have a similar mood so you can relate, so that, you know, what you like to do and talk about is similar to them. So then what they're doing, you can relate to, I can do that in advance, right? Because otherwise it's too different. Then one can appreciate their commitment in that, but you may not be able to apply what they're doing directly as it is in your life. You'd have to take it and translate it into something you're doing. So that's why it's recommended those who have a similar nature, those who you associate with, but who are more advanced. Right? So in your position, you can continue to advance. Right? Congregational chanting of the holy name, so the chanting together, then that becomes, because then it's a matter of devotees are working together to please the Lord, so that's always very special. There's the personal interaction, and then there's the group interaction, so they're both very important. And residing in the holy dhams like Mathura, right, so that you're residing there, because you might come and do some service and that, and then you go, but to reside there. So it means either you're residing in the dham itself, or where you live, you make that into a place where it's always about Krishna. Yes.
Did you say that all of these were expanded from the last five?
Yeah, means in other words, from 21 to 59, those are all expansions of these five. These five are the main ones. Yes.
Is there any significance to singling out Mathura specifically, as opposed to?
No, it just says like Mathura.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you're talking about. You know, basically the general how Vaishnavism works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just anything that's connected to the Lord. So it might be some other place. But Mathura is specifically, that's where the Lord's born, you know, where he appeared. Mm-hmm. So that is outstanding. So if you say just that one, because he didn't appear in Dwarka like that. He didn't appear in, you know, in Kashi or this or that. Mm-hmm. So then, you know.
Maybe Rupa Goswami was in Mathura when he wrote it.
No, that's there. But I mean, the previous one he mentioned is Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka. Because that's how you make those things. Because otherwise, somebody who's living in Vrindavan or in Dwarka, then it will be, oh, it's only in this one or that. You know, so you have to watch that also.
And the reason Bhagavatam is mentioned specifically, I mean, it's all supporting literatures also included as the same level of potency. Or do you think is Bhagavatam especially?
No, Bhagavatam's our book.
Yeah.
So the point is all of the literatures are supporting Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, because Bhagavatam's the main literature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But as far as when you're discussing philosophy and showing the lineage, then it has to go back to the Veda.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then the lines do. But the point is of the Vedic literature, the Bhagavatam is the most important literature.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Vedanta Sutra is giving the essence of the philosophy, right? So the philosophy is the most important element of the whole Vedic presentation. But the point is then you have to apply that philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Bhagavatam does.
Right.
Like Vedanta Sutra doesn't. It gives you very clearly the philosophy, but it doesn't teach you how to
mm-hmm.
apply it.
Right.
Right. So that means Bhagavatam becomes more prominent.
Okay.
Right there. The last five have already been described within the other limbs. But on account of their preeminence, they have been repeated separately. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Means all the other limbs we see are describing these five. But at the same time, it's because, so you can say they're already covered, but because of their preeminence, they're again described separately.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because these five are the main. Please know that all these limbs describe how to worship Lord Krishna with one's body, senses, and mind. Right. Items 21 through 49 in the second part describe initiation into the worship of Lord Krishna. Okay, 20 to 49 is what you're going to do in connection with worship of the deity. Right. Does that make sense? Lord Chaitanya mentions about these main five is that these five, if they're performed, then even even the potency of them, even he can't describe. Right? It's so, you know, just their potency, what they can do is so special that even he is impressed. Right? Because it's his internal potency. So the point is the devotion of the internal potency then attracts Krishna. So even he's impressed by what happens with these. Vijaya, Babaji Maharaj, kindly elaborate upon the very first limb to take shelter of the bona fide guru. Raghunath Das Babaji. The disciple should be qualified to engage in pure devotional service, to learn the science of Krishna. The disciple should take shelter of a bona fide, should take shelter of the spiritual master's feet. Any jiva gifted with shraddha, created by such association, is eligible for shuddha bhakti. Sukriti, accumulated in many lifetimes, guides a person to saintly souls who talk upon spiritual subjects. Hearing these topics from the pure Vaishnav will purify and create Shraddha in the heart of the aspiring Jiva. Okay, footnote 4. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.6, by acting on the platform of fruit of activity, one wanders throughout the universe in different species and forms. Until he comes in contact with the devotee of the Lord, a guru, he does not become attached to the service of Lord Vasudeva. This is confirmed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 19.151. Quote, the living entity wanders throughout different planets in different forms and bodies, but if by chance he comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, by the grace of the spiritual master he receives Lord Krishna's shelter and his devotional life. Right, so that's the whole idea, is to come in contact with devotees. You come in contact with devotees, then devotional life starts. Otherwise, Sukriti is there that will guide you to the devotees, but then still that one has to take advantage of it.
Sukriti also comes from the devotees.
The Sukriti has come from the devotees, but the Sukriti will also then guide you. It means, in other words, by the grace of the association of devotees, you come in contact. That contact will put you again in contact. You know, it's just like the material desire seeds, when they're performed, when they sprout, they produce more seeds. So the same thing is, whatever you desire, whatever you do, the desire to do it again is there. So that works with the material, but also with the spiritual. So if you do some devotional activity, you'll want to do that again. So that's why if you focus and increase that, then that becomes the main, as we mentioned, samskar for the mind. So then the mind is always absorbed in how to do things in connection with the Lord, right? Because there'll always be that desire to do it again. Mm-hmm. Then the material doesn't function anymore, right? That's the idea. Mm-hmm. Okay. Devotion to Krishna is the topmost spiritual path and of the greatest value. The eligibility for Shuddha Bhakti arises from sincere and firm faith in the Lord, which evokes the following six symptoms of surrender. 1. Accepting duties and activities favorable to bhakti. 2. Rejecting activities detrimental to bhakti. 3. Knowing that Krishna is the sole protector. 4. Accepting Krishna as the only maintainer. 5. Regarding oneself as meek and humble and dependent on Krishna. And 6. Not having a will separate or independent to that of Krishna, and thus wishing to perform whatever Sri Krishna desires. Right? So when it says surrender, it means these six. These are the six different aspects. A person who thinks in this matter has firm faith. He is qualified to engage in unalloyed devotional service. 5. Footnote 5. This is based on the verse from the Vaishnava Tantra, which Shiva Goswami quotes in his Bhakti Sandarbha 2.3.6. The six elements of taking shelter are described here as follows. Anakulasya sankalpa pratikulasya varjanam. Rakshi yatiti vishvaso goptritve varanam tata. Atma nikshepa karpanye sadvidha sharanagati. Accepting that which is favorable, rejecting the unfavorable, believing that Krishna will save me, accepting Krishna as one's maintainer. Self-surrender and humility are the six types of Sharanagati. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has elaborated on these processes in his Amrita Pravaha Bhashya. 1. Accepting that which is favorable means that which is favorable to developing one's devotion to Krishna. That's how you know if it's favorable. If it's going to help you develop love for Krishna, like your faith in Krishna, then that's favorable. 2. Rejecting the unfavorable means, well, one must vow, I will renounce any activity which does not lead to Krishna. Right? So otherwise one gets confused on whether something should be done or not. Does it take you to Krishna? It's accepted. If it doesn't, then it's not.
Maharaj,
yes.
What if there are several things that take you to Krishna?
So there's a problem, you can't do all of them? I mean, at the same time. So just whatever's appropriate for the situation, or whatever works best for you.
For you?
Well, I mean, it works for me, but I'm just saying what works for you.
Yourself into account too much?
Means if you don't, means you're the one that's self-realization, means yourself.
Okay.
Means it's not someone else's self. You know what I'm saying? But it means it has to take into consideration that you're actually becoming Krishna conscious. Not that you get prashad first, so that's why you'll be more Krishna conscious. You know, like that.
But what if you're not sure, like, I mean, you can always guess what's going to make you more Krishna conscious, sure.
But the point is if they're recommended activities, so when's the recommended time to do them? Because generally they come one at a time. Right? Japa period, you're supposed to be doing, chanting japa. I mean, you could also do Facebook for Krishna, but you generally do japa at that time. Mangalartik, you're at Mangalartik.
Well, what if it's something like dressing the deities or chanting japa?
Then whatever the opportunity is there. Why, they ask you to address the deities? If they ask you, then give it a try. If they don't ask you, then you sit there and chant.
It's not that. It's just different.
Or if you want to address the deities, then you try if you have the opportunity. But, it just means you do have to chant just later or earlier, whichever you like.
I often experience like visitors coming to Mayapur, and they sometimes almost get fried out because there's so much possibility. Maybe they come from like a little town where it's like one Mangalartik a week or something like that, and then there's the Harinam and there's the
do how much you can. It's just like how much prasadam is there.
A lot.
Right? So how much do you eat?
A lot.
Yeah, but it's how much you can. So you know what I'm saying? So you do according to your capacity. But the point is, don't be lazy. That's why there's the thing on the festivals of trying to do more than you actually see. It's just like every day you're about to die before breakfast, but then if you fast till noon, then breakfast isn't so difficult after that. You understand? That's what's that. And then when you think that's bad, then there's Janmashtami, right? So then it doesn't matter. You know, you can eat at nighttime. It still is better than fasting. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that you're always doing something to extend that. One should never be dissatisfied. We're doing this much, that's all right. It's a matter of, because even if the volume is the same, the quality should be improved. Right? So in other words, it's developing for Krishna's satisfaction. Right? Yeah.
What if the service is not like, just one day to the next? Couple of hours, it's like a couple of months or a couple of years.
Then you just have to see your capacity. If you have the nature for it, then it will be easy enough.
Okay.
If you don't have the nature, then you pick the shorter one. You know? But if it's the nature, but there's just a lot of ignorance, then that's another consideration.
How would you tell?
Means you can do it, and you can do it quite nicely, you don't mind doing it, but then you're lazy and would rather be doing nothing. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not a matter, you want to be active, but that service is difficult, but this one would be easier for you. But you have to see other things. You know what I'm saying? What were you doing before you had this opportunity for service?
What's that got to do with it?
Because what you're doing before much of the time shows at least what your conditioning is at now. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you were cooking a lot before, so you wouldn't have a problem cooking for the deities or cooking for the devotees.
The cooperation of consciousness.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Hmm. But, you know, if you've never cooked in your life and then suddenly there's opportunity for being the head cook, then, you know, you might consider that. I mean, if it's something of interest, okay. But, you know what I'm saying? So the point is you want to be practical but dynamic. You want to see that you're engaged, but at the same time you want to see that, you know, it matches. It's something you can do continuously. Right? Because better to do something continuously than just one time and then nothing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. Like, every day you eat a certain amount. That's better than one day eating, you know, a huge amount and then not eating for 2 or 3 days and then eating a huge amount, that, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Well, that's why then you just keep yourself engaged and you try. And if it works, nice. If it doesn't work, then there's other, like you said, there's many things to do, so then try it. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, then try something else. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
When a soul receives initiation or comes under his shelter, that's an eternal relationship. So that means that the same person is serving as a spiritual master in the next, eternally in the other lifetimes to come.
Yeah, generally. Like that. So that's why one should take it seriously so they don't have to come back here and be the spiritual master. Because in the spiritual world, being the spiritual master is not a problem. Because it's, you know what I'm saying? Like that. But yeah, it's the same person. They may not look exactly the same, but it's the same person. Like that. Okay. 3. Believing that Krishna will save me means believing that Krishna alone is my savior. In other words, one should think, I do not believe knowledge of Brahman will save me from death, but Krishna will definitely be merciful and deliver me. Right? So he's mentioned here Brahman because material world is, you know, has already been counted that that's not going to work. Right? So therefore, just knowledge of Brahman, in other words, just spiritual knowledge that I understand the transcendental platform and how to get out of the material world, that's still not going to save me. It's only Krishna, the person, he can save you. Right? 4. Accepting Krishna as one's maintainer means one thinks, I do not believe that the deities presiding over the different sacrifices or religious performances deliver the results of these acts, nor do they maintain me. It is rather Krishna alone who takes care of me and not any other man or God. Right? In other words, the point is the person is performing karmakanda activities or this or that. Whatever it is, the results of that are coming from Krishna. They're not actually coming from that particular demigod or anything. So then the devotee knows that whatever facilities I'm getting is coming by Krishna's grace. It's not by someone else. Right? Does that make sense? So Krishna is the savior. He's the one who can save. And Krishna is the protector. Maintainer. He's the one only who is giving the results of one's endeavors. Like that. 5. Surrender means to think my wishes are not independent and completely subordinate to the will of Krishna. And 6. Humility means to think of oneself as very lowly. Right? Like that. So that's the... What's at the end of the page? Yes. As the jiva becomes more eligible, he becomes more eager to learn the practice Shuddha Bhakti. Thus, he accepts the ashraya, shelter of a bona fide guru, right? That's the next one. So he's heard, and he begins that faith, right? So he takes that, he has that surrender. So now he's more eager. So now he wants to practice Shuddha Bhakti in a regulated fashion. So then that brings him to the next, taking, I think it's called Guru Parashraya, taking shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. The Vedas state, Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.12, he, the sincere practitioner, must attach himself to the process of the science of devotion. He must humbly approach with a gift for sacrifice, a bona fide spiritual master who is well versed in the conclusion of the Vedas and who has realized the science of Krishna consciousness. The Chandogya Upanishad 6.14.2 states, only the person who receives proper initiation from an acharya, the perfect spiritual master, is realized in Brahman. The Hari Bhakti Vilas has extensively delved into the topic of who is a bona fide guru and who is the shishya, sincere disciple. The main symptoms of an ideal shishya are that he must have a righteous character and be faithful and sincere. The model guru must be an exponent and practitioner of Shuddha Bhakti, as well versed in Bhakti Tattva. He must have a spotless saintly character, must be guileless, bereft of greed, simple, uncontaminated by the Mayavad philosophy, and expert in all his spiritual duties. For Brahmana, well respected in society, is crowned with such wonderful qualities, he automatically becomes a guru for all the different varnas. If there is not such a guru available, the disciple is directed to find a guru of a higher caste than himself from whom to take initiation. Right. However, the real consideration, apart from such caste etiquette, is that one who knows Krishna in truth, being realized in Krishna consciousness, should be accepted by the sincere disciple as a bona fide guru. Right. So that's the essential element. He knows Krishna, that's bona fide. But because we're dealing here in so many cases, especially here who's asking the questions, they're from caste Goswami families, right? So then there is the consideration of one's social position, right? So then if it's available, then you take shelter of someone who is from a Brahmin caste, at least one above yours, because then socially you want it sometime, if something doesn't go right, then make some comment or take them as two equal, right? But the real point is it's what they know about Krishna. So it has nothing really to do with what's the caste, what's the background or anything. Right? So that's the main point. They know Krishna, then that's the right person. But then you have to behave properly. Right? Because they're giving Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? It means if you're following Vedic culture, right, and you know, then there's that respect for the Brahman. So even if you're not taking things spiritually, at least there's that respect even on the material platform. But if one doesn't understand these etiquettes, or one is very entrenched in that, if he's from a position that's not like that, then one might look at it from a material point of view. Does that make sense? So that's why it's there. Simply, it's not because it's essential. It's because we're the ones who are the materialists, right? Like that. Yes.
That was the problem with Ramanuja's wife.
Yes, because Ramanuja's guru was Brahmin, but from a lower group of Brahmins than Ramanuja was. So therefore, they drop into the mundane element of the culture, and so then they have problems with that. Right? They can't see the transcendental. Because on the transcendental, it doesn't matter. But then the point is it has to work. You know what I'm saying? So this is just for those who are from the culture who follow like that, and then does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So back in the day, the spiritual master was very involved in their disciples' lives, and they all lived together and, you know, did everything together. But these days, it doesn't seem to be like.
No, that's if you're in an ashram, then it's like that. But if you're not in an ashram, it wouldn't be like that.
So today,
you know what I'm saying? Like a brahmachari, he may live there with the guru and that. But grihasthas are not living with the guru.
But still the guru lives in the village. And this
could, but may not. He might live in the village, be there, that. Then that's ideal. But also sometimes they're just traveling. So you have both examples. That example where it's either the brahmachari in the ashram or the gurus in that area, like that. But sometimes you just have sannyasis, they come through once, they preach once, you know, and then go, and they may never see them the rest of their life. Like that. But the point is they're so committed to the instruction that they have the instruction, they can follow that the rest of their life.
So ideally today, how much involvement does a guru have in the disciple's life?
Means, but what do you mean by involvement?
Well, what kind of decisions or service requests or instructions they give, like how far do they actually...
The point is the decision means has to be made by yourself. But if they, you know, they're around and know, you know, your specific conditioning well and how you respond to different situations, they might be able to give more advice. But the point is you have to be able to make that decision, or you work with whatever the local authorities are that are dealing with you or engaging you. If someone's managing it, so then they should also have some idea. Does that make some sense?
Yeah. I guess I'm just trying to figure out what the point of a guru is, other than being connected with Parampara.
It means that here's some instructions that you will follow.
But you just said it's my choice whether I do or not.
No. That's there. It means that from the first point being made of taking shelter, of guru, and actually then taking initiation in that. What was that? Taking shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, receiving initiation instructions from him. So it's your choice. That's what's coming up next, I think. I think it's at one point. Yeah, I think it is here. Is that it's your choice on whether this is the person that you want to surrender to. Right, you have to be respectful to all Vaishnavas. But whether this is the one, because once you surrender, then those instructions are the ones you're going to apply in your life. Does that make sense? Because it means if it's not formalized, then the conditioned living entity tends to think that, you know, when you're inspired, then you do, and when you're not inspired, then it's up to you whether you want to follow or not. But the point is you've made a commitment that you'll follow it anyway. Does that make sense?
So that commitment is made after you've surrendered or after you've taken initiation formally?
Ideally before you've taken initiation, but at least by the time you've taken initiation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, but it's not that they're involved in necessarily your day-to-day life, and you know whether you should get this job or that job, or you know whether you know we've been eating cauliflower for the last so many days, you know, should we get broccoli, or, like that. That's not the stuff that they're supposed to be doing.
Okay.
Right? That you're supposed to work out with whoever else is involved in the eating process. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to be able to tell the difference between what are social elements that you get from others in the social environment, right? And then what is connected with what is the spiritual element, which is how you can be understand and be engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense?
So, sorry to keep going at this, but...
No, it's fine, because it's coming up anyway, so...
Okay. So can you, if possible, give some examples of what a guru might say, like what kind of instructions?
If you can give some examples of what kind of question would be asked to the guru...
So it's not just like, you know, hey, here's the instruction, and you go do it. It's not like that.
I mean, it would have to be a pretty short instruction to be that quick.
Well, I mean, the guru is performing a service for Krishna, therefore I assume that he wants all his disciples to be engaged in the service, to help him in that service, right?
No, but the service is helping Prabhupada's mission.
Yeah.
So, depending upon where you are, you're generally working under some authority there. So by doing that service in that place nicely, then you're assisting Prabhupada's mission. So that way you're assisting the guru. It's not that you have to be specifically doing the same particular service or project that he's involved in. You understand? His point is you're involved in Prabhupada's mission. That's involved.
So then the instructions might not have anything to do with it. The instructions might have something to do more with whatever's going on at where you are.
No, the instruction is how to connect yourself to Krishna. Right? It's not whether you should take the blue one or the red one. That's not the... Does that make sense?
So would the instruction be something like, listen to your temple presence?
That might be an instruction, especially if you have a tendency not to listen to your temple presence. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the point is the mission is what is everybody's trying to do. Everybody's following Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya. So if we're involved in something that's useful within that mission, then taking the instruction of Guru to see that you're doing that, that's following the instruction of the Guru. You know what I'm saying? It means if you want something more detailed or more particularly personal to your, like, you know, it's like you come up to the buffet and there's three subjis, which one do you take? Then you choose a guru who's willing to get involved in that level. But otherwise, then you can't expect that. It's the instruction of how to apply yourself in Krishna consciousness, keep yourself in Krishna consciousness. That's what the spiritual master is doing. The other are social considerations of your conditioning, that what at the present moment how to deal with that. So he may be involved with that and can give nice direction, or he may not. You know what I'm saying? The point is that there's the instructions upon which you apply it.
So would it be something like the guru might say, chant 16 rounds and listen to your temple president, and then if something else comes up, some sort of problem, then the guru makes the decision there?
Yeah, then you can bring it back again. But I'm saying as long as that works nicely, because generally that'll work. But that, even that is more specific to a service. The point is that's the generic thing is that temple president mean whatever the temple president. You're in that temple, you work there. You're in another temple, it's there. The point is you chant 16 rounds and cooperate with the Vaishnavas. That's the actual principle. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's not a matter of, you know, which side of the bay you're on. Does that make sense? Or is it a river?
You did mention that this topic you could discuss also with our Siksha Gurus or senior devotees.
Yeah, there's also that. Siksha Gurus are there. You know, so you just have to, you just work it out. Senior devotees are Siksha Gurus, because you have three levels. You have the Adi Guru, which is Prabhupada, which his instructions, which everybody's following. Then you have the Sadguru, which is the Diksha Guru or other Siksha Gurus that are on that level, that deal on, you know, there's a commitment to them personally to following their instructions. Then you have the third level is the preachers. So any devotee who is preaching Krishna consciousness, you know, in some way or another, then they're on that third level. So they preach during classes, they may talk to you, they may be managers, they may be senior devotees in the community, you know, any of that group. So then they're, so between these three, then you can get some direction. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
What if they conflict each other?
The point is the higher up it is, the more important. Okay. Right? It has to be based on Prabhupada's teachings. Right, so then like that. But it's also sometimes due to our conditioning we think they're conflicting when they're not necessarily. Right? So then it's a matter of, you know, discussing and trying to find out. Is that? Yeah. The scriptures have also described a preliminary time of mutual testing between the guru and the disciple. The guru should see that the disciple has become eligible to enter the path of Shuddha Bhakti by his sincerity, faith, and respect. In addition, the disciple, by his examination, should develop the faith in his heart that the guru is truly a qualified pure devotee of the Lord. Footnote 6. In the mantra Muktavali, it is said, the prospective spiritual master and disciple should live together for 1 year. In this way, they will come to understand each other's nature. then it would be known whether the spiritual master is a genuine spiritual master and the disciple a genuine disciple. There's no other way to know this. Hari Bhakti Vilas 174. Right? So that's why he generally sees as that time is there, is that one can see that it's proper.
Mm-hmm. How's that practically possible? Like, I can't imagine too many people actually doing that, especially when a lot of the sannyasins travel around a lot.
Yeah, so then it's, the point is, this one is, the principle is Prabhupada's teachings work. If we're committed to that, then is this guru committed to those instructions? Do they give us, are, when they speak, are we able to appreciate and understand what Prabhupada says and apply it in our life? Right? It's not that, see, you can have a bona fide spiritual master, but because nature is different, you may not appreciate how they approach or how they preach or how they instruct. But someone else, then they're very comfortable with that. It's very much nature. That's what you're checking this, you know, the bona fideness. The other is you're checking if the nature matches. You know, I mean, in other words, can you work together with this person?
But if that takes a year, non-stop being there,
means that's this is the, in other words, this is basically meaning the brahmachari. You know, grihasthas means, you know, if you added it up a year, then you might be pretty old by the time you get a year. So that's what I'm saying, is that this method of having the founder acharya makes it much easier. Because you know, as long as they're following Prabhupada's instructions, it's bona fide. So you don't have to worry so much like that. So more what you're checking is the nature that they have and the nature that you have, is that compatible?
Okay.
That's more what you're looking at. But before, is you don't know, because it's just a guru.
Yeah.
So, okay, you know they're in a parampara, but how much they've understood. But here it's that the instructions are already given. That's why in the Kali Yuga, the method of the founder acharya is always the best principle. So all the sampradayas use that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Mark? We see that general instructions we're gaining from Srila Prabhupada books and from, as you mentioned, general preachers,
right,
and senior devotees. But then somehow the tendency of most of the people I know, the most of the disciples, they look for some kind of special instruction, you know, then it's going to come and it's just...
Yeah, because if you ask them, they'll think they're special.
Yeah, they are.
No, yeah. So the point is a special devotee needs special instructions.
Correct.
Right?
So is this,
but then you have to have a special guru to give special instructions, yeah, to that special disciple. So that's why they should pick a guru who doesn't mind giving special instructions. Right? Like, cause, I mean, I've seen so many times. You sit there and talk, and stuff. They ask questions and everything. You've answered everything, all the different angles and all that. Then at the end, just when it's, you know, it's done, it's understood that it's the end of the conversation, then they'll ask, any special instruction? Yeah. Like that. And so then that's when you understand that there's a difference in mentality. Because what you gave before, that's the special instruction. You know.
Have you ever had fun with them by giving them some kind of weird instruction?
No, you just say something. Have you ever thought about that? Stand on your head for 3 hours a day.
They asked.
Yes, while sipping a pina colada.
Guru Maharaj.
But Guru Maharaj, we don't have coconuts. So. Yeah, no, it's the point is that anything about Krishna is special. So the point is what instruction is given, if one is able to appreciate that and see how that applies in life, that's a good connection. Because the point is all senior devotees have something valuable to say. But the point is those that you find you can practically apply it in your life, those are the ones you spend more time with. Yeah, yes.
We see that Srila Prabhupada initiated disciples on the basis of a recommendation from a temple president or by letter sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, is this like a historical phenomenon within Vaishnavism? And secondly, is it kind of a worrisome trend today that some gurus are following this, you know, tradition?
No, because the point is that it's like generally what it is they're moving in a particular circle. Mm-hmm. And within that, they know the senior devotees there. So they know their standards, and mm-hmm. so they know if they recommend, then you take that, mm-hmm. like that. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem. Or if it's a matter of they want to spend that time and see, then that also works, because that's also the recommendation. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's just a matter of how broad you can work with. Mm-hmm. You know, Prabhupada being him, he could work with any range. So there wasn't anybody he couldn't work with. So it doesn't matter. Any temple president, according to his nature, he's going to recommend people. But he probably can work with that. So the thing is it's just a matter of what you're comfortable with. If you're comfortable with that you know the person, so therefore anybody they would recommend, you're comfortable. But if not, then it's then you check yourself. You know, or any combination. It doesn't really matter. It's not a difficult thing. Okay. The point is as long as it works.
Right.
Like that.
Another question is the tradition of chanting on the disciples' beads before awarding the name. Which scripture, and which level of initiation that comes from? Is that Pancharatri?
I can't say exactly, but see, you have the Nama Guru, which is just the Vartma Pradarshak aspect, means one who connects you to the line of chanting. So you get the name there, but the Diksha is specifically about instructions. Initiation is specifically on instructions, like that. Instructions, and then, you know, for us, because Hare Krishna is the main mantra, it's there, but you've already gotten it before by whoever you bumped into, the new bhakta or this one or that one, and it's working. The point is now it's the instructions in practicing that chanting that's important, right? So there, you know, it's just, see, the thing is there's so many varieties of initiation, you know, so is theirs. So this is a simple one. If you want to follow like the Ramanujas, they take you and they have the Yajna Kund, you have to do everything fast the whole day, and then they tie you up with string. I think it's 24 wraps, you know, for all the 24 elements. And then you sleep the night in that yajnashala. Then in the morning, then they depending on what dreams, this, that, so many things, then they cut the strings. Just like cutting that, and then they go through the whole process.
I see.
You know, but what if you got to go to the bathroom? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, these things work on very regulated people that if they fast, then they don't have to go to the bathroom.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So there's so many different, Shastra gives different methods. You know, Pancharatrik, it's Tantric, it's Vedic, it's all these different methods of initiation. So then, you know, this will be leaning, you know, that basically more on the Bhagavat, you know. So it's not a problem. Because if someone wants to say, well, that's what made the connection, then they miss the point of what initiation is. Because Prabhupada said, when they ask what it is you accept that the spiritual master is the representative of the Lord. So what he says is what you're supposed to do. That's the point. So it's the instruction that you're committed to following the strength. That's the initiation. That's why there's a yajna that is purifying, right? You feel something's happened. But technically it's not the yajna that makes you initiated. It's the acceptance of the spiritual master within the heart and his acceptance of you. That's the initiation.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then the Pancharatra has those five, the wearing of the neck beads, to indicate that the material world is a place of, you know, suffering, so it's not the place to get involved, right? The tilak, that you're taking the path, you know, taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, right? Surrender to the Lord, that you identify yourself as the Lord's devotee, so you take on a name that indicates that as servant of the Lord, right? Then the mantras in which you can worship the deity, and then the actual ritual of worshiping the deity. Those five comprise the initiation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's That's the point. Now, what is the external form of that? Then that's established according to the, you know, how the Acharya establishes it.
Right.
Like that. But that's what you're trying to accomplish, is those five. Right. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was divided into two parts. Mm-hmm. The first three and the second two. Mm-hmm. Because previously it's you're having somebody who goes and looks for the spiritual master. So there's a bit more sincerity there. So, you know, by spending time, and they spend a year together, then you get both at once. But here is, you don't, you know, the backgrounds are varied in that, so then you get the first one, and when you show maturity and stability in that, then there's the second one.
Right.
But it's still one initiation. First and second are still two parts of one initiation. Mm-hmm. It's not two different initiations. It's still one initiation.
Right.
Yeah. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I just connect that with Guru Govinda Maharaj. Went looking for a guru, and by the time he found him, Prabhupada gave him all that ones.
Yeah, like that. You know, so that's the point, is that when you have that, then they go together, and that should go together, but it's separated so that there's that time to mature in the process.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the...
Mm-hmm. Upanaya would be the thread.
Upanayanam. Yeah, that's the thread is for the Upanayanam. The Pancharatrik initiation doesn't require a thread. Right? Bhagavat doesn't require a thread.
Mm-hmm.
The Upanayanam, the thread is connected with the the thread's connected with Upanayanam, not with the Pancharatrik. That's why you have Vaishnavas. Before, they wouldn't have threads, but they have second initiation.
Mm-hmm.
But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur establishes the thread so that people wouldn't... would, as a minimum, accept the Vaishnavas as Brahmins. Like that. Because the point is, this Vaishnava is greater than a Brahmin, but because you had so many of these Smartas and others, then the complaint is that, they're not Brahmins, so how can they preach, how can they do all these things, how can they worship the deity? So, therefore, they don't understand the Pancharatrik platform and the Bhagavat platform is higher than the Vedic. So therefore, just to establish it on the minimum is that at least they accept on the Vedic level. Like that. That's the idea. But otherwise, before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if someone was in a family, they get Upanayanam, they had a threat, and if they weren't, they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be like the Brahmin family, right?
The Brahmin family, but also Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they would practice. But Brahmins would always practice. Kshatriyas generally also would. But Vaishyas, you might see it, might not see it. It means they should be doing it, but whether they do. So you depending upon the class of the family, you would see all three wearing the Brahmin threads. Brahmin threads doesn't mean means Brahmana by caste. Brahmin thread means one who is studying Brahman, right? Because the Brahma Gayatri is about Brahman. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
You're talking that statement that Prabhupada makes, that one who gives most siksha generally becomes a bhikshu guru.
Yes.
In our situation with Adi Guru and various siksha gurus, is it the composite of all those? You know, because what she was talking about, you may not have much time to actually get direct shiksha from someone.
No, but the Adi Guru is in a different category, because his Adi Guru means he establishes what is the shiksha, right? And then the Sadguru and the preachers, they're going to be giving relevant instruction, probably is the term, so that you understand that instruction of the Adi Guru. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, who's the most prominent in giving relevant instruction, they're generally the Diksha Guru. Right?
And that should be someone that you have regular...
It's not as much on volume as on quality.
What you need as an individual...
Yeah, it means the temple president may be giving you a lot more instructions. You know, but it's the point is that element that brings about that surrender, that's the Diksha Guru. Right, and then that's applied. Then you apply that surrender and practice there, following the instructions of the temple president. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are two categories of guru, the Diksha Guru, initiating guru, and the Siksha Guru, instructing guru. The disciple accepts Diksha from the Diksha Guru, and from him learns the process of Archana. The Diksha Guru is one and one only, but there can be numerous Siksha Gurus. The Diksha Guru may also give Shiksha to his disciples as a Siksha Guru, right? Because that would be the normal standard, but sometimes it may not be available because Diksha Guru is there, you're somewhere else, so other Siksha Gurus are giving, right? Like that. But the process of deity worship in that is specifically, that's the connection, because when you do the deity worship, the connection to the deity worship is through the Diksha Guru, because he's given the mantra, and he's given the right to worship, like that. But the overall process of devotional service, that's what Siksha is about. So which includes the Archana. Like that. So that means you may just give that much and then you may not have that contact. So others will give Siksha in cultivating the devotional process. Right? But it also, he may be one who's also giving that. So generally, for us, then one is doing all of that. Does that make sense? Yes.
The connection to the process of worship. So when we are doing our worship, we should have this photo, right?
Yes.
In my case, my guru was he was sannyasi and he left the ashram. So there was some process. And sometimes devotees said I should not use his photo. I was confused at the time, but I'm not too...
Because they're confused. The point is this position of the guru is not dependent upon the ashram, because bhakti is not dependent upon karma, right? So the thing is the ashram is defined on what's going to work best for you, right? If you're, you know, a student, then you're celibate, doesn't matter what. That's the way it is. Otherwise, the two don't work. You can't study and, you know, do other things. Otherwise, it gets too long, right? And the idea is that as quick as possible, you learn so that if you want to go into Grihastha Ashram, you can do it at a younger age so that you have that time to work everything out, right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, it's a good chance. See, adults maybe be able to balance it, but kids, it's not going to work. You know, it's either, you know, the whole boy-girl things in your head or, you know, the classes in your head. You can't, there's no room for both, right? Does that make sense? So therefore, but the Grihastha Ashram, that means then you're engaging a wider range of things in the Lord's service. And if you're dealing with Vanaprastha Sannyas, you're dealing with less. You know, it's more narrow. You're just dealing with the direct activities. You know, a minimal indirect. Well, Grihastha means you have the opportunity for engaging the indirect. Right? So, therefore, for the guru, it doesn't matter if he's a Grihastha or a sannyasi. Right? So the point is if Grihastha gurus are okay, then what's the problem if the guru is a Grihastha? Right? Now, the normal thing is you go from brahmacharya into Grihastha. It's not so normal to go from sannyasi into Grihastha. But the point is, you know, when you're dealing with, it means those from, you know, the lesser pious backgrounds, sometimes that's what it takes to figure out what you need. You know what I'm saying? So then, technically, what's the problem? That's just the changing the ashram because that's what works for your situation. It doesn't mean it changes their spiritual understanding. It just means they're more aware of their own particular needs, right? Of course, if someone is not practicing properly and becomes distracted, so just material desire comes up and the other goes down, that's something to worry about. You know, like Ramachandra Khan. I think it was Ramachandra Khan. Because I think there's a few Ramachandra Khans. But there was one... Or Ramachandra Kaviraj, I think. Yeah, Ramachandra Kaviraj. He was one of the senior personalities in the Vrindavan scene, but because then he was offensive with this one lady devotee. I think she was on the liberated platform, so she would just always be chanting. So she's listening to the conversation, but because of habit, her tongue is always just chanting. So he got upset that why you're chanting while the discussion's going on. She's saying, "Well, I'm listening to you. That's my tongue. It's doing that." But somehow or another, he didn't appreciate it and made some comments that he shouldn't have. And then just the material desires grew up and all that. And eventually he just went back to Bengal and got married and disappeared and never heard of him again. That's another thing. So in other words, if he gives up the devotional process, that's something to worry about. But if he doesn't, it's just he's just shifting from one ashram to another. It's not ideal, but it's a social problem, not a spiritual problem. We're the ones that mix it all together into a kitchery and can't tell what's what, and we're not good cooks. So that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? So that's where the difficulty comes up. So it's not ideal, but if that happens, then what's the problem? We're the ones, oh, we can't be up on the altar and this and that. And it's kind of like, and when was the, and shall we do the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur test on you? You know what I'm saying? You know, when was the last time you touched your wife? And what was the, you know, occasion? What's it about? Was it how many rounds? Was it planned? Was it all this and that? If not, then shut up. You know what I'm saying? But what's your position? Right, you know what I'm saying? You have the right to touch women, so therefore now no one else should have the right exclusive to you. What's going on? You know what I'm saying? So the problem is you have a lot of mundane kind of moralism come in, which has nothing to do with reality of Krishna consciousness. Right? Because they're saying, no, but it's the rules. If according to the rules, malechas don't follow this process. We've seen what are the qualifications. Right? The point is they're saying the qualifications for Shuddha Bhakti. So it's basically what they're doing. The normal thing is you come in, you're already a pious person following Vedic culture. You have the knowledge of the Vedic culture. You have the practices of the Vedic culture. Like that. You have that, all those good qualities. Then somehow or another you've come in contact with the devotees that they've, you know, made your fortune. Now that Sukriti is there, you search out a pure devotee. Right? Rather than they have to come and drag you out of the gutter. Right? Then you go to him, you take shelter, you hear like what's going on here, you ask these kind of questions. Right? You know, not what time's lunch, you know, stuff like that. And then you when you surrender, then you're already on the Madhyama platform performing pure devotional service. That's standard. So if they want to talk standard guru, that's why it mentions this standard disciple also. You want to have fun, find the Pancharatra Pradeep if you can ever see one of those things. In the second volume, there's one section where it says the qualifications of a disciple according to Hari Bhakti Vilas. I guarantee you, devotees who've been in the movement 30, 40 years would be hard-pressed to say, I have all those qualifications. That's the ones to start number one. But when it comes to guru, we have a million things to say. You know, just like, you know, what are the duties of women? All the men have a million things to say. But what are the duties of a husband? Nothing to say. It's the same thing. It's just nonsense. So the point is when you have an environment like that, then you just put the picture of the Siksha Guru. You know, and at home you keep your Siksha Guru. The point is the normal thing is one is to have your Siksha Guru and your Siksha Gurus. You have all the pictures. Like that, but it doesn't matter. But if there's a problem with the Diksha Guru, he's not functioning, or there's some social difficulty like that, then just put the Siksha Guru. The point is it's the instructions that are nourishing the devotional creeper. So who's giving those instructions? Then you put them. Does that make sense? So that's the normal. Because the point is Vaishnavism isn't based on it. The social system is there to support it, but it's not necessary. But it's only necessary because of us. Right? The devotees have problems if the social system isn't strong. You know, people don't interact, they're not nice, they're not this, they're not supportive. And so they have doubts in devotional service. Devotional service has nothing to do with that. You know what I'm saying? But we need it as a conditioned living entity. Therefore, it has recommendations of being involved in the process. Does that make sense? So that's its only use, but then we'll take it as we please and elevate something from Varnashram to pure devotional service, and things of pure devotional service we'll say are impractical. So as we please, we deal with that. So we have to avoid that, understand what's the standard, And then understand, okay, this is my position, and I'm making my endeavor to come as close to that standard as possible. Like that. That's progressive. Then it works. So that point, if it's sincere, then it works. Right? He must humbly approach. So, righteous character, be faithful and sincere. Right? So the point is the person who's pointing it out, is he of righteous character? Or is he just a moralistic character? Because righteous here means dharma, not artha. Right? If you're involved with money, then you're worried about morality. Why? Because if I have money, if people aren't moral, they can take it. That's why you see that the pranamoy mentality is always worried about justice and morality. Though underlying it is money. Right? The people who are into money, making money, and you know, business, they're the ones that talk morality the most. Why? Because without it, you can't do business. Right? If I'm doing business and people are taking my money, how does it work? Right? Because he needs to keep the money. Because then he has to give in charity, he has taxes, he has to take care of his dependents. So the money can't just go because other people are not, you know, ethical. Does that make sense? So it's important. But the point is that's only the second level of consciousness. So one shouldn't take that and then try to replace it, that it replaces the fifth level of bhakti. No, that's your occupation. So you apply it there. You don't apply it in devotional life. In devotional life, the minimum you're starting with is righteous, meaning according to dharma. Is someone situated according to their nature? Do they understand how to see that nature in connection with the Lord? That's dharma. These other things are just ethical. They're business stuff. All right? That's where we start. In other words, artha and kama are below the standard. But if they're connected to dharma, and the dharma is connected to Krishna, then they're okay. So the farthest down the Lord descends is into dharma. The other ones are connected up to dharma, then you've connected them. You know what I'm saying? The standard place of descending into to this level of consciousness is vijnanamoy. That's called it hoksaja. So how he's expanded into everything like that, you can see God in everything. Because, you know, the real thing is Krishna is a person. You know, his past name, form, qualities, pastimes, and all that. But within this platform, he is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So to be able to see that, that's the natural position, because that's how everything comes. Dharma is based on that, right? What's the primary creation? Dharma is the documentation of how that works. So then that's the grossest how we can see. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important. It's not that that's bhakti. So generally when they're complaining about, you know, how you say, artha. They're not complaining about dharma. You know? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, the point is they can quote all the things that the sannyasi should be, but can they quote all the things that a grihastha should be? There's half a chapter on sannyas, right? And there was three full chapters, big chapters on grihastha. How much of that do they know? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Is that somehow everybody knows everyone else's dharma, but not their own. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
Talking about how you got to
the in?
The chapters.
No, Manu. Because Manu describes Varnashram. Hari Bhakti Vilas is an encyclopedia that describes the Pancharatrik process.
But it still has stuff on the reaction.
Yeah, by how grihasthas would engage in the deity worship. But the aspects of getting up, taking a bath, and all that are the same for everybody. Only difference is it's just grihasthas, it's a little more formal. Like, does that make sense? That's all. For the brahmacharis, it's not so formal. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, it's time. Oh, okay. 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 Okay, so your question is the next one. Vijay asked that next.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Govardhana ki.